Welcome to the podcast. Slightly different intro music this time. That's because my guest is Jan Ratzep, owner of the Black Metal Brewery. Jan's from Russia originally, but found himself here at the Edinburgh Uni doing a science PhD. He stayed on, and for the past few years he's been brewing beautiful strong beers, much to the delight of black metal fans everywhere and, of course, other beer lovers. My interview with Jan was more of a loose conversation over a couple of drinks than a formal interview. Well, Jan's not a formal kind of guy, as you'll probably hear. And we chatted about the recent Camera Beer Festival where I bumped into him, black metal, of course, his beers, his journey as a brewer, and, yeah, lots more in between. He's a really interesting guy. So pour yourself a drink and put on some black metal. Here's Jan. How did you enjoy the Camera Festival?
Well, I didn't enjoy quite this year, the one good thing, that was they took some casks as sailor return.
Okay.
And the thing is that the sailor return, basically, if you take what they pay, if not, then not, and they return the cask. But my two beers, well, it was Will Wisp, and it was the Gates of Valhalla, ran out on Friday afternoon, as last year.
A Friday afternoon?
Yeah, so like they started Thursday, and then it was all done. So, and then they tapped another one for Saturday. I don't know how much of that was done, but a lot of beers were sold out. That's why I decided not to open on Sunday. Like last year, they didn't, but people came and said they were quite disappointed. No beers, you know.
So sometimes they're open on a Sunday as well?
They used to be, but it looks like the festival has gained the force.
Okay.
So as a result, they decided to do something to correct the last year's thing. I think they said they are not allowed to increase the number of beers by more than like 7% a year or something like that.
Okay.
So they tried to regulations, whatever kind
okay.
of regulations.
Yeah, sure.
So they decided basically to have it this way this year, and I think it was a good thing. But a few good beers, had a few, and yeah, generally it was not disappointing. It went for 2 days in a row as I was judging at the Champion Beer of Scotland.
Okay.
And then they brought some free beers and stuff.
Okay.
After that, I was thinking that I was supposed to give a presentation, but something didn't work out with the trade session, so next year they said, okay, still
what presentation to do?
Like giving some samples to, they wanted to make a trade session with people who are involved.
Okay.
Like they said that anybody who has a personal license or whatever certificate can come in for free and have free pints or beer. So because they are trying to bring people, producers and, well, not only consumers but also distributors and retailers with each other. So.
Do you find some snobbery towards the image of your beer?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Plenty.
Yeah.
So I don't care.
I'm sure you don't.
Why should I?
Yeah.
Good people still drink the beer and enjoy it. So the ones who don't want it are free not to. There are of course some people who are trying to contribute to my reputation somehow.
Oh yeah.
I know that too. Also don't give a fuck about both themselves.
Yeah. You're just sensing yourself. That's very cute. You don't need to.
All right. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. I have to tell you, I come from a kind of a punk rock background.
Okay, that's good.
Drinking and punk rock are kind of like that, you know. I see a similarity to the black metal scene because I think both scenes let you be yourself.
Since they let you basically let yourself, the scenes, it's not something that lets you, it's like being passive in certain ways. If you say that some, well, probably it's just a linguistic.
Mm-hmm. I know what you mean,
thing.
Yeah. It's easier, shall we say, to just, you know, to be in a context.
But black matter, what you're saying, has been. Definitely, punk has contributed quite a bit to black metal because there was no black metal. In a way, there's always been black metal if you listen to some classical music. In a way, there's always been punk, and not as a music style, but as an attitude towards the world and perception as well.
Yeah.
As a fact, throughout the history, people have not changed in the last at least known 6,000 years of known history. Not just they have red roots, you know, new shapes and so on. And if you look at punk nowadays, it's something that's just fashion. And punk was against fucking fashion. That's, so, and the same when people are trying to copy the, you know, the black metal has revolutionized a lot. And thrashed out, producing many subspecies and so on. It's more of a mood than, rather than, oh, I'll play with Satan and kill a virgin, fuck you.
Time trackers, yes.
Of course. So it's mood, it's vision, it's perception, as well as punk, I would say. So it has quite a bit of overlap.
I think there's a lot of overlap, and where I see the connection with the beer and punk anyway, or any kind of booze for that matter, is more a connection with the subconscious or with the inner child or with lack of inhibitions. These two things go hand in hand. So, I don't know, do you think there's a similar situation in black metal and alcohol?
Yeah,
like a similar relationship?
The thing is that, yeah, of course, and I would say if people go to extremes, and very often people who are in the scene, as well as people who drive the scene somehow being producers or supporters, which both matters a lot. So I don't know, I'm pretty sure many of people who look at Darkthrone, but I don't know if they were drinking brake fluid or something like that, or antifreeze. Darkthrone, for example. I mean, of course, the punks and the Arctic, at the same time, they contributed loads to black metal, if not to say more.
Mm-hmm.
So there's massive overlap in many things. I mean, or take Gigi Allin and, you know, kind of punk, but I mean, so many black metal bands made covers of him, and there's a total overlap. Is probably the differences in attitude, but it's, what was Motorhead saying? It's all rock and roll in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there is quite a bit of aesthetical perception in this. So I don't know, the black metal brewery comes from me and punk completely. Hamlet, he was playing in the Monolith as a drummer, and I was doing some stuff with him, and then Moonrape with Dave from Glasgow and Nachten, and then so we're all kind of involved and always going to the gigs and so on.
Uh-huh.
And black metal is, as I said, the mood. So, and was like, why not fucking black metal brewery? That's something that we would like the most, the beer and black metal, that really is like satisfying and fulfilling, and then nice. Get drunk, we'll burn something.
Makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
And do you find people gravitate towards your beer because of the black metal label? Do you think that fans who might not...
The labels kind of might be partial gateway,
mm-hmm.
and that's thanks to Sean Parry, this a good friend, and who's been doing the artworks, and sometimes it came to his head, sometimes he just sent me a few things, what do you think feels best for it, and actually just seen him first time in 3.5 years, so he made an addition in Barcelona. He was a meat shop moved from Copenhagen to Barcelona. I live in the middle of nowhere.
All right.
He travels all over the world, America, Scandinavia. He's in Iceland now, and I'm waiting for him for to send kind of his vision of the new beer as we made. This guy is absolutely great. He's created quite a bit of things, and his vision is quite a bit overlapping with mine for visual representation.
Uh-huh.
So obviously the labels somehow, and yeah, there's been a few people helping with the labels as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of collaborative things. Mm-hmm. People contribute quite a bit, and without a lot of help and support, obviously black metal brewery wouldn't be possible. It's standing on the shoulders of giants and great people and loyal people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the label's attracting attention, but the thing is that the label gravitates. I think there's also gravity,
mm-hmm.
that gravitates people towards the beer and the overall taste. So as I was said, the consumer votes with a pint.
Yeah.
And that's as close to the actual what people call democracy can be. I think it's one pint, one vote.
Yes.
So you're actually elected.
That's it.
And your beer is elected. Some people ask me, do you brew beer for like for higher alcohol content and blah blah blah. And I said, always said no, because it's not true. I've always been beer that I was brewing at home and probably at the farm when I was made the first pilot system at the farm about 3 years ago. But before that, I was brewing at home, and my prototypes, most of them were over 8-9%,
okay.
And so on. So because I always like the beer to be tasty, mm-hmm. and of course you can do session ales which are 3.something%, and I'm not against and so on. Just probably I have not found the recipe that, or the approach and the taste that I would really like with that. Maybe because I have not tried hard enough. But generally,
I'm interest led.
I'm tending to make the beers, the ones that I do like, I follow at least the prototype as and matching it in the recipe as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, not to go completely ballistic, but still, it happens so that all my beers are above 6%, and that is a side effect of me not being, or being basically generous with malts.
Okay.
I think the malts, being generous with malts is not a bad thing.
No.
I think you get much higher alcohol ability,
mm-hmm.
to pay.
Of course.
As a result, the price is going to be slightly higher, and many pubs, as I see, do not want it in, even though the public would love to. So a lot of it goes at the festivals. The festivals are generally during the summer.
Okay.
So I think I'm going to change the mode a little bit and produce more casks for the warmer times of year.
Mm-hmm.
And some pubs do take things that, for example, the potting shed next door. Mm-hmm. They have a permanent light for me there. And so far, public has been always happy with it. And I've seen people drinking my beer by pints and behaving okay.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's public, especially in Glasgow, where people are still behaving okay from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the pubs in Glasgow, for example, as I understand, many of them do not want to have a cask on. I don't do pins. Maybe I should, but it's, half a cask.
Yeah.
Of 41 liters, it's basically 20 liters. But they're not going to take it. It's not that overly expensive compared to some beers, keeping in mind the ABV.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they do not want they want the public to stay behind the bar for as long as possible and being active, not under the table.
Yeah.
So even though people generally are absolutely fine, okay, they get more drunk, but they. The Ivory Blacks in Glasgow, for example, they are having the beer in, on all the time, so I'm supplying quite a bit. But Kevin, who is running it, is a metalhead, and he is dedicated. So I've seen him washing the stage after the gigs from pig's blood and stuff. You know, so he doesn't mind,
yeah.
And he really likes to, for his place to hold the real metal gigs.
Yeah.
At the same time, he likes the real stuff too. So in other places, we'll name them probably not the best. But anyway, I think they dropped the black metal brews even though they were quite popular because of the profit margin. If you, in the past, if you would sell Red Stripe, which you would buy for, I don't know how many dozen pennies, 50, 60, 70 pence probably you can.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sell it for nearly £4 in the club.
Yeah.
The profit margin is immense.
Yeah.
Because they know people are going to come, they're going to want to drink. Most of them are not going to smuggle anything in. So they're going to buy from behind the bar, they're going to buy whatever is available. Because at some point, people just want to drink.
Yeah.
So, here's the cash.
Yeah.
What I did like about Arrow Blacks is that the guy is really supportive. And he supports metal, and he's a metalhead.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants the beer to be there. So he knows people are going to come. And they're going to come to the club to see a metal performance and metal gig, and also get metal beer, which is not just a brand like there are many out there now.
Mm-hmm.
So
That's a genuine metal.
Yeah,
craft beer.
Bi-metal heads, four metal heads, for fuck's sake. That's,
yeah.
And that's the whole idea. And as I said before, if I wanted to just to get cash in, I would be selling Coca-Cola or something. It's no fucking point.
That's right.
The new beer is still called Lohi. Some Finnish mythology that the wheat beer is going to be. I don't know. We'll see what she thinks about it. She has contributed to creation of beer itself, and it's in Kalevala, which is the Finnish epic, well, poetry. It's a basic collection of songs. But in other cases, I wouldn't use the personal name. Not things somehow historically related or second names or something. But
okay, interesting.
Yeah, or it's like some people use the Lemmy's name. What the fuck? It's like, and then they make like 4%. Some kind of thing that I seriously, they should be bitten to a pulp. Cheers.
Cheers. That's awesome. Has someone tried that? That would be shocking.
Seen a couple of times on the internet already.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like using the image of that guy, like just dying, being a fucking legend, and it's like, that's at least not respectful.
Not at all. Yeah.
That's
pretty low. Well, tell me some more about your beers. So which ones have you got at the moment? Which ones sell? I know that you're having, you know, strong beers limits your market, your permanent like cask market, but what do you sell most of and what do you have?
I would say Yggdrasil sells the most. And I think it's because in people's perception it is a pale ale, so I drink much more of it.
What's Yggdrasil?
Yggdrasil is it's a world tree in German Scandinavian mythology, which holds nine worlds, including ours, which is Midgard. And I named a pale ale after it. And it's 6.6% dry hopped with Amarillo. It's reasonably strong, at the same time, not as strong. Most of the beers drink below the alcohol content that is declared in. On them, even though they have that content, sometimes a little bit shoot over. that's probably true. But anyway,
okay, I'll edit that bit.
With Yggdrasil, people see that as pale and they generally drink it more than, for example, the Blood Revenge, which is also 6.6.
Blood Revenge?
It is the rice stout.
Rice stout.
And, for example, that was the first night that I sold. Well, not just sold it, people drank a lot. And not at all, they drank something like 32, I think, cases of Yggdrasil 33, and only under 4 of Blood Revenge.
Okay.
People's perception is just pale ale, the stout. They have the same ABVs. Okay, one is more, has more body and more dense and is dark as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's people's perception. I think that could drive a lot of things. Not just I think, but it really is so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same as I'm stupid comments like, oh, you like metal brewery, you should be making dark beers. Fuck. Where did you come from?
Yeah. It's all black. It's got black written on it.
Should
be black.
Should.
Yeah.
So then Will of the Wisp is, it used to be 6% also. I mean, two of the beers at 6.6 came by accident pretty much to that level.
Okay.
Somehow dictated by quantity of malts, I think I can fit in the mash tun.
Okay.
And so Will of the Wisp was 6%, it's now declared more like 6.6 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's my marketing strategy. Because some people are like, say it's 6.66. I'm like, no, that would be a lie, because even in the lab, I would be in doubt to have such a precision.
Yeah.
Generally, it's not possible normally. So, Will of the Wisp is juniper smoked ale. So I had juniper and then the boil. And I use beech smoked malts as opposed to, for example, oak smoked or peat smoked. It's not as smoky and it's more mild in flavor. So it's not a little bit not off-putting. Anyway, even though it's mild compared to some Norwegian beers that I tried, they use juniper twigs to put the runoff through the wort through, and they use ultimately smoked mussel, basically get hit in the face on the side of the smoked, ultimate smoked malt, and then hit in the face from the overall, like, total juniperness. So as for that, even though that probably is a dividing beer for people, as some people and whatever the rating thing, that, like, I don't like smoked beers, and then put the low rating, it's like, why the fuck did you buy it? It says clearly, during group smoked, and you don't like smoked beers, you don't need to check. So, but
I can't believe people do that. That's so
true. Yeah, well, people do a lot of things. And
that brings the overall rating down. The
thing is, as I don't remember if I mentioned it, I have an overlap of two worlds, if you wish. Mm-hmm. The metal world, and I would say people who do like the beers that I make, that the brewery produces. They are one of the most loyal customers, and they do support a lot. And that's the thing about the metal folk. Mm-hmm. And from the other side, it's people who are into real ale and people that really like the good beer and not necessarily into metal. And there's been a lot of support from their side too, which I truly appreciate. So I think in this sense, it's also you get the confirmation by both sides, not just as I would not go for trends, which I really don't like and what people expect, and so on. So you get solid base of fans formed, which I think is the right thing to do. So slowly, step by step, it's been over 2 years, I'm brewing at the premises of Top Out. So yeah, then the other two beers that I recently produced was Jotunblod, which is oatmeal rice stout, 8.1%, and Gates Valhalla, oatmeal pale ale, 7.9%, so both around 8%. Pretty much, and put two casks in Kilderkin on 20th of February, and launched with most pretty successful, I would think. People downed completely the Gates of Valhalla, a cask, in one night, and nearly downed Jotunblod, which I did the day after, not the next day, because it was Sunday, the day after. It was quite good, sort of black metal blasting throughout the night in the pub, like total takeover. Yeah, they had these black things that looked like graves, and so, oh yeah, these things look good. So Piska put runes and whatever, made a satanic altar with candles, and it was good.
That's amazing.
It all went really, really, really well. Uh-huh. So, there's even last pints of you, since February, I don't know how often they publish. There is a photo from there.
That's when I read about that. That's right. I was looking at the pints of you, and there's a Kilderkin takeover. You use the Pop Up Brewery.
I didn't use them. I was cuckoo brewing there, renting premises from there. I have my fermenter now, and let's see what happens. But yeah, the guys have been really supportive for the last 2 years, over 2 years. And Michael made an absolute accident, because I was going to support every day, every evening on the way from university. I was working home. I was passing Marshman Road, and the Cork and Cask shop was just open. And that was run by Chris Mitchell, who actually gave me quite a bit of valuable advice in the course of over a year, until I stopped passing there, because I stopped university, quit the PhD, and started brewing full on. So and Michael was giving the first presentation of his beers there, so I came in and blah blah blah, and I see the person, and like, look, kind of built this with a farm as well, and as black metal brewer, had no idea that he was a metalhead as well.
Oh, is he?
He already had short hair and so on, but then somehow I was invited later on to brew the premises, and then I found out that Michael had been into black metal for ages, and long before I knew things. Like, he's been to Dynamos and to all the types of European festivals, and so in Seoul he still is. I've noticed that there are so many people who are into metal, who are in the beer, producing the beer or distributing the beer or working with beer in many other ways, not even saying about mentioning the consuming vast quantities.
Vast quantities for a good market, but you're saying there's a lot of people involved in them as well.
Yes, of course, and that's a good thing. Mm. In what I've noticed in small scale brewing is a lot of people are, especially the brewers, tend to be much more chilled out people. You have quite a bit of responsibilities and things to look after, but in general, there's something that makes people more chilled in their head or something, or maybe just gathers certain people. And I mean, in brewing community, if you're really a shit person, sometimes it's going to be known because people talk to each other. I don't mean to gossip, because I know some people that are spreading absolute shit about me, but that happens everywhere and anywhere. So but generally it's a lot of collaboration rather than competition, for example.
That's good.
So and yeah, help given quite often when you didn't really truly ask for it, but you know, would somehow facilitate and yeah, and the same from my side, whatever advice I can provide or, you know, help somehow.
You're happy to share?
Of course. Mm-hmm. That's, as I said, it's more collaboration than competition. There's the big boys out there who are real competitors.
That's true. That's very true.
Or dumping the prices, you know, and so on. And taking over the market. And day before yesterday, you were like us, and now...
Yeah, you're trying to keep...
You're up your arse.
Yeah. So you say you've got your own fermenter. Is that
in
on
those? For now, it is. Yeah, it is the top of presence, because the guys also got their own the third fermenter in as well. So we hope to be able to somehow expand. We'll see. Fingers crossed.
That's good.
I don't want to talk about it before the actual things happen. So, but a lot of things on the table, and we don't want obviously to grow too fast as well, and I do not like the whole idea of growing too big either. I don't know where I would cap my production. Too long, step by step, and some offers I couldn't take because I wouldn't be able to satisfy the demand.
Okay.
And then we'll see, because it's all up to be seen. How can
it develop? Just see how it develops. So you haven't got a massive plan, but I'm going to be every Aldi in the country.
No. I wouldn't. Aldi, I think, did a really good thing by providing small brewers with the opportunity to put their beers out there.
For sure.
And also getting an order from like smaller production scale brewers, which for them it's kind of a present that helps them to get more known and also push quite a bit of beer at once, which helps the cash flow as well. Because
mm-hmm.
many cases, I mean, there's been many cases when it was you would struggle quite a bit, and I don't really care, so I can pay for the flat bills and I don't mind what I eat. And I already have carbohydrates.
All right. Available. That's true. That's your plan, isn't it?
A plan.
Enough to eat.
Yeah, well, the vision is, anyway, you can foresee maybe 2-3 months the things that are changing before things get more stable. Things are constantly changing. Even I heard from some brewers who've been there for way longer. It's like a guy from Elkin telling me, like, yeah, it's always going to be breaking even. So you always have to fix something, you always have to replace something, you always have to upgrade, you always have to expand, you always have unforeseen circumstances. So basically, and for which I said I'm happy to serve Dionysus.
Yes.
And that fulfills the existence to a great extent.
Uh-huh.
And of course, making thousands of people alcoholics.
Or helping them on their way, at least, yeah.
Well, not to become a shit ones, but
yeah.
quality
alcohol.
No, that's,
I like
it. That's a joke, of course. Half joke.
Loyal customers, let's just call them loyal customers.
No, of course, no. Loyal customers, really loyal customers know what to fucking drink.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. First, there's a lot of as the initial prize, I like to people constantly looking for something novel. And that's the thing that a lot of people who brew try to achieve. They always try to follow a certain trend, which happens who started. But since people are drinking this now, so we're going to start doing this, we're going to start making this, we're going to start decorating our place in a certain way, which is trendy now, blah, blah, blah. And then yeah. Decoration. And I don't know what they're trying to catch. Well, a bit of, well, they're feeding on this. You know, the top of the way where you get the cash flow, you know, like, you know. But I don't see that as something that I would be really interested in, because it's pointless to follow the people's trends. People change with the mind, with the wind, you know, and whatever the wind blows.
I'm fairly confident that black metal will never be on trend.
It shouldn't be, otherwise it's not black magic.
Exactly. Black consumerism.
If you wish. Have another sip of this.
Yeah, let's have another sip.
Nice one.
You can tell me where people can buy your beers.
I think it's that I do publish on the things on the website.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always do it extremely up to date because people in the HTML and stuff. So it's too lazy to update or
fair enough.
Log in or something, but for the rest it's locations, part of the website which is named locations, so
you just go online and find out whatever you've got.
Yeah, I use some social media like Facebook and Twitter. Once in a while, I've not been approaching any big distributors. So ALSA is doing distribution in the West Coast, for example. They got a cask to Aberdeen a couple of times as well, to 6 degrees north. And then sometimes when, you know, I can send beers on occasion, somebody's going down south, whatever, I should probably do it more with bands. A friend was moving to Brighton? Brighton was moving to Bristol.
Bristol, okay.
Yeah, not Brighton. Brighton, another mate thing. Was moving to a place nearby Bristol for like half a year, and I just met a person who was running a metal pub, Gryphon, at my launch in Kilderkinnon here. I was launching the gates of Valhalla in Jotunblod. He was like, yeah, right, man, like your beers and your concept, so if I can get the beers down there. So when I could, I sent him a couple of casks, a few cases. All went. So it would be good once I can offer more, then yeah, I'll probably talk to a distribution company or something, or I don't know, again, it depends, because there are some people who are kind of fine with having a van and, you know, going for a journey and then make a journey yourself, drop the casks off, and then come back, and then come back for more adventures and pick the casks, the empties. The only concern, I haven't asked some bands to do that, but the only concern is that the lads on the way would say, like, fuck it, let's step into the cask.
Drink it.
They're never going to be delivered. Like, sorry, Jan, I couldn't control it or something like that.
It's £3.50.
I can foresee it, like, a whole cask, like, never delivered. But fuck it. No, we'll see.
I think that's a valid concern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's more than a valid concern. I just fucking know.
It's knowledge, yeah.
Practical.
Do you produce more bottles or casks? I mean, I could see it being easier to send casks around the place.
No, more bottles.
Yeah.
It's easier to sell bottles for me for now. As I said, there's an issue with pubs taking the beer.
Mm.
I mean, again, I have not advertised myself that much because sometimes I run out of casks. And then, or I only have casks of the recently it was a few months ago now. I ran out of most of casks except for like Gates of Hell and a few casks. Well, several casks were already reserved, so I couldn't really offer anymore. And then, so that's the thing, more storage space, more beer I can make, more beer I can mature, with more types of beer, I can continue finish writing a liquid album. At least the first one. That's a person that I know said. She said that she compared the liquid soundtracks some years ago. And I was like, well, that's actually a real kind of definition of what I'm doing. So it is music, but it's in liquid form.
Yeah.
the first three was an EP, so In Brazil, Will with Gates of Valhalla. There's two more, and the sixth one is in Fermento, which is a wheat beer, which we're going to see what it turns like. So, first
thing.
Me too.
Yeah.
Also, it's being bottled tomorrow.
I look forward to seeing the label for that as well.
Oh, me too.
Mm-hmm. Have you not seen it yet?
No. Mm-hmm. It's a label takes time to make as well. Mm-hmm. It's one person who is drawing his vision, and then that goes into in the process of putting the things together and actually the label together and so on and so on and so on. And it all depends, it's not just one person. So anyways, it's more complex than just sitting at home and printing it just in one night.
Yeah,
so
I can imagine. Yeah. Have you considered making booze?
Well, the thing is that I've made mead before a few times, but that requires a maturation of around a year at least.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for young mead, and probably less, but for the proper mead, I would say a year.
Okay.
But conditions in the bottle as well, and then just really good. That's how I got into brewing on a larger scale, or was it the farm? The person I was working with was a beekeeper. Mm-hmm. He brought me some honey that he couldn't sell, because I imagined that was making mead and wanted to make more.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, well, leave you a couple of buckets of honey, which I cannot sell because it's been overheated by accident, and so the taste is not right, but for your purposes, probably fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly what I did. I took the honey, turned it into mead, and then it's been matured for at least a year, and for longer, and give a couple of bottles back to the beekeeper, and he brought it to a place where he was starting to, like, he was planning his retirement. He wanted, and he did start the beekeeping place, like a proper one, making courses for educating people, making them beekeepers and so on. So I was invited to start the farm, and then I continued for nearly a year. I built my own system, 100-liter pilot system, using gas burners, and optimized the recipes for the from homebrew scale to 100 liters, and then at some point met Michael and so on. So it's who invited me later on to brew at the premises of Top Lab Brewery, and to brew there. Basically, the idea is to brew on and
keep on brewing and metaling.
It stays dead. Nobody stage devs anymore. Like, fuck that. I was stage diving with a broken jaw at Ashgold at Marduk. It was 3 months from entertainment place in the jaw. And people now, I couldn't believe my eyes. They don't just not stage dive. Maybe some headbang, but like the band is finishing set. And it's like. People clapping their fucking hands, and I couldn't believe it. Like, what the fuck is this? I see it already not once, and it's a horrible tendency. Like, I think it's really, really.
What do you think is going on? Different people getting into metal, or the metalheads becoming too polite?
I think probably both. I see the degeneration completely. Like,
oh no!
But drink and puke and fight, and I don't know, just. You know, be real.
Yeah. Is that your message to the world?
Drink, do
it, fight, be real.
Well, I mean, it's one of many.
One of many. Anything else to add?
I would add some to this glass, if there is anything.
No, I've drank it all.
Okay, let's go to Ashes.
Let's go to Ashes. Thanks for coming.
Well, cheers. Pleasure.
That's amazing.